Mr. Rosenson.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Arthur Rosenson. I represent Richard Hamm and Carla Oftenkamp. They are married. I'll refer to them as the Hamms. No fraud would be sanctioned in this case against Fusion, and no injustice would be promoted against Fusion if Millennium's corporate form is honored. As a result, the judgment against the Hamms through the piercing of the corporate veil verdict rendered by Judge Shader should be reversed. Nevada law applies. This third requirement is independent.
Counsel, I'm a little puzzled why we are here. Why wasn't this worked out in the Nevada litigation? If somebody asked for attorney's fees in connection with frivolous litigation, isn't that usually within the scope of the supposedly frivolous litigation?
I can only say that Fusion brought the suit here. At that time, Judge Shader elected to hear it.
Did you make a res judicata defense that this had to be litigated in Nevada?
When I was brought into the case, their answer already was pled, and therefore there was no res judicata.
All right. So the answer is no. Your clients never asserted preclusion based on the failure to resolve this in Nevada.
Correct.
Okay.
Fusion is a sophisticated investment banking entity. Its principals all have MBAs and JDs. They understood everything that was presented to them in 2004. They knew Millennium had no assets. I shouldn't say no assets. They know that it had assumed liabilities that had a 100-to-1 ratio to its assets. The assets were nominal.
I'm puzzled. It obviously has some assets. At a minimum, it has a leasehold interest in the Hamm's house.
It had assets of $60,167.
Excuse me. Would you deal with what I just said? You just said it had no assets. I said it obviously has some assets.
Correct. $60,167 was the recorded assets on its financial statement.
All right. Does it have any asset? Is that its asserted value with a leasehold interest? Because if I understand it correctly, the corporation is the lessee of the house, which it then subleases to your clients.
Correct, but I was discussing 2004. Yes, the lease was entered into in 2006. It is subleased a portion of it to my clients. That's correct.
All right.
In 2004, Fusion had full access to all financial records of Millennium. It knew and understood every aspect.
What's Millennium's current financial situation? Is it the same as it was in 2004?
Worse. But it is still insolvent. At the time in 2004, the debt-to-asset ratio was 100-to-1. It is, they still have no business operations that are earning income, and therefore their position is worse.
It's got a very nice website.
Well, the website may be nice, but the fact of the matter is that they still remain.
How does it pay for the website, by the way?
Excuse me?
How does it pay for the website? You need to pay a web designer. You need to pay for bandwidth.
Well, it hasn't been updated recently, and the Hamms have lent money to Millennium periodically in 05, 06, 07, and 08. All of those documents are in the record, to the entity in order to fund minimal operations. So it's not in the record as to what the lent funds were used for, whether it was used for accounting purposes or for a website developer, but it's minimal funds to maintain a website.
It's on the house.
Excuse me? Going back to the principal argument, in 2004, there is no dispute. Fusion understood everything about Millennium's position.
Let me ask you now a legal question. One thing that perplexed me is that neither side has discussed the Nevada statute that was enacted in 2001 that covers veil piercing. You know, almost all the citations are to pre-statutory cases. Neither side's brief even mentions the Nevada statute. I've got two questions about this statute. One, is this a normal statute or is this a unique Nevada statute? That is this the same kind of thing you see in the Model Business Corporations Act, so we can go to other MBCA states and see what they do? And the second question is, has the Supreme Court of Nevada construed the 2001 veil-piercing statute?
I can only tell the Court that I have read every Nevada case regarding veil-piercing. I have not read any case that is addressing the statute. there isn't a plethora of law. We cited the cases where the Nevada Supreme Court has addressed it. So
the point of a statute is to replace old common law decisions, and the statute actually changes the language, although it's hard to know what the change means. These old common law decisions talk about sanctioning a fraud or promoting injustice. The statute says promote manifest injustice. I don't know the difference between injustice and manifest injustice, but perhaps a Nevada court does.
Right. There is no reported decision that I have read interpreting the phrase manifest injustice and comparing it to the previous citation.
Do you know whether this statute is a common one? Is it based on the Model Business Corporation Act? Is it based
on Delaware? I do not know that answer.
Pardon?
I do not know that answer. So in 2004, all of this information was known. They went into it with their eyes open, without requiring a guarantee. They knew that they were dealing with an insolvent entity. Now they come and complain, an injustice will be promoted against us, a fraud will be sanctioned against us unless we have the ability to collect on our contractual debt against the owners. But why? In 2005, in 2006, in the interim time, financial...
Well, aren't they really complaining that you dropped the ball with Satura?
There is that complaint, although it's somewhat bizarre, because repeatedly they allege and assert, and Judge Shader stated, that it was Fusion that terminated the stock purchase agreement. What Millennium sued on was that they argued that Fusion should not have had the right to terminate the agreement. So it wasn't a question of dropping the ball. It was found that Fusion had the right in 2004 to say, you know what, we're not going to go with you, Millennium, in order to fund this to finance this reverse merger. Instead, we're going to go through another source. So it isn't a question of dropping the ball. It's a question of Fusion, whether they had the right to terminate the party's deal. The Nevada court found that they did. And so that case was lost. And so they were allowed to go through TVG to fund the reverse merger, which has a liability to asset ratio of 1,000 to 1, not 100 to 1, like Millennium, but 1,000 to 1. So it's our position that Fusion knew everything from the get-go. They didn't require a guarantee.
I'm sorry. I had trouble following you. So I thought their complaint was that that your company had not gone through with this reverse merger with Sutura, and that this had hurt or disappointed Fusion.
They say two different things at times in their brief. At some times, they say that they terminated the agreement. On other occasions, they say that it is the fault of Millennium. But I will quote on page 6 of our reply brief, where I have a string cite to the Judge Shader's decision and to the excerpts in the brief cited by Fusion, that it said, Fusion stock purchases had not been required to commence, and on November 1, 2004, Fusion therefore terminated the agreement. This is an A4 of the appendix.
Agreement with Sutura or what?
If the court is looking at the appendix, it's page H.
I'm looking at your reply brief.
Page 6, yeah. Block quote, sub-indented in the center of the page.
Right.
This explains that the agreements were both terminated by Fusion and Sutura. It was their act. And then underneath that citation are the statements in the brief from Fusion stating that it was their voluntary act. There was no compulsion, no requirement for them to terminate the agreement. I'm uncertain of how much time I have left, but I want to say
it's Fusion that... I see. You're saying Fusion made the decision to
exercise its option under the contract and terminate the deal. That's when Fusion pled. That's when Judge Shader stated.
It wasn't Millennium's fault or Tham's fault.
No, Millennium wasn't happy about it, but it wasn't its fault. I will save the rest of my comments for rebuttal. I apologize for being brief.
That you've got about 23 seconds. Mr. Malone.
May it please the Court, Edward Milan on behalf of Fusion Capital Fund II. If I may, I would be happy to address both Judge Easterbrook's question and Judge Posner's questions. With respect to the question of claim preclusion, in the original Nevada litigation, actually, Fusion did bring a claim under the stock purchase agreement for recovery of attorney's fees. And the court denied summary judgment on that. The contract has a choice of venue provision that provides that all claims relating to the contract must be brought in state or federal court in Illinois. We contended at the beginning of the Nevada litigation that Millennium's tort claim had to be brought in Illinois. The judge rejected that. We went ahead and filed a counterclaim for the attorney's fees. But once the other issues were resolved in Nevada, we decided to proceed in Illinois. And there's actually Judge Shader raised this very question when we filed the suit in the district court. And there's a decision by this court called Publicis, which says that when a contract has a choice of law provision, there was what might otherwise be a compulsory counterclaim brought in a choice of venue provision, where there is what might otherwise be a compulsory counterclaim brought in another court, claim preclusion does not apply. The party is not required to then bring their claim in this other court when the contract has a choice of
venue. I find puzzling about your case. I think of piercing the veil in a contract situation rather than a tort situation as basically a matter of deception, right? You think you're dealing with some substantial firm, and it turns out that this substantial firm is just a Potemkin village that's been set up in order to shield the actual the owners and operators from personal liability. And I don't see that here. I mean, because as your opponent was saying, Fusion knew that Millennium had no assets, and yet it was willing to do business with it. Where's the deception?
I think to understand the answer to that question, you have to understand exactly what the merger deal was. So the original deal between Sutura and Millennium was a reverse merger. Millennium is a publicly traded shell company. Sutura was going to merge into that company, was an operating company. And after the closing, the company that would emerge would be an operating company called Sutura. The Hams would have only 10% of the shares. They would not be involved in the management. And the merger deal required that Millennium, at the time of closing, could have no more than $185,000 worth of debt. The stock purchase agreement contemplated that Fusion would be doing business and would provide capital to that post-merger company, Sutura, okay? And that Sutura would not have these debts of Millennium because they were going to be paid off. And, in fact, Millennium had gotten bridge financing before the deal. And the Hams would not be involved. So because of the timing, Fusion entered the stock purchase agreement with the Hams and Millennium, but that they were not contemplating that they were going to be doing business with the Hams and the company they were going to be.
That is fine, but you're not dealing with Judge Posner's question, which is mine too. Is your client saying that it thought that Millennium actually had assets and was shocked later to discover that it was an empty shell?
No.
All right. So there's no deception. Now, I don't understand your client to be arguing that the Hams withdrew assets from the shell. There's no assets to withdraw.
We don't know, Your Honor, because Millennium...
If you agree that there were no assets in it, then you can't get blood from a stone. You can't take assets out if there are no assets in. So the question then is, if you search the decisions of all 50 state Supreme Courts for cases seeking to impose liability on investors where a contract debtor knew that the corporation had no assets, are there any such cases? I set my law clerks this task, and they couldn't find any. They could find a lot of cases denying claims for liability. But I wonder whether you've found any such cases.
I have not, Your Honor.
What's the wrongful act that Millennium or the Hams committed?
Well, there doesn't have to be a fraud. There merely has to be an injustice. And the wrong.
No, wait a second. You don't just sue people for an injustice. I understand how, if there's a shell a company, then as a result of which, you know, you can't get a judgment against them or what have you. Injustice may somehow add something to deception. But it doesn't mean that every wrongful act committed by a corporation can be attacked as an injustice, right?
No, Your Honor, but
what is
the wrongful act?
What is the wrongful act?
There are two parts to the wrongful act. The wrongful act is that Millennium sued Fusion for an act that the Nevada court found that was actually a damage that was caused by Millennium, and then after that judgment was entered, Millennium stopped preparing financials.
When you first agreed to get involved with Millennium, you knew if you thought about it that if you should ever get into a tussle with a Millennium and try to collect attorney's fees from it, it wouldn't work because it doesn't have any money, right?
There was an expectation.
It's a risk you take, right? You deal with an insolvent company. You know that you're never going to get attorney's fees from an insolvent company.
Well, the expectation was that this company would become solvent after the merger.
It's more than insolvent. Right, insolvent could be a substantial firm. It could be General Motors, has a lot of assets. This company has nothing, right? It's got nothing. So you knew from the start you were dealing with nothing. It would only be something if it succeeded, you know, in its merger with Satura. So you knew everything. So where's the injustice if you deal with your eyes open with a completely assetless enterprise? The risk you assume is that, you know, if you have a fight with them, you're not going to get your attorney's fees.
Well, Your Honor, among the things that Fusion didn't expect and that that contributes substantially to injustice is that for the last 2 years, once the judgment was entered that was potentially going to subject Millennium to attorney's fees, it stopped creating financial statements. It became a black box. It had financial statements. And when you couple that with I don't know whether it has assets today or not. I know that it has a house.
Counsel, you can find that out. You now have a judgment against Millennium for the attorney's fees. It may or may not be collectible. There are supplemental proceedings to collect judgments from Millennium, and you can require them to reveal their financial statements, disclose their assets. If Millennium's got assets, or if they've bailed assets out to the Hams in order to avoid paying, you won't have any problem pursuing those assets. The question on the table here is whether you can pursue assets that were never in Millennium's corporate solution.
The problem is, Your Honor, I appreciate what you're saying. We, in part of our discovery here, sought information about bank accounts, saw financial statements. They're not there to be found, and they won't be there to be found, apparently, in the litigation in Nevada having certified our judgment.
They just don't exist?
We're told they do not exist. They have not created financial statements. We asked for bank accounts, and they didn't produce them until response to summary judgment when they produced cover pages to show that Millennium has a bank account in name.
Well, have you asked them whether they have any assets?
Yes, we asked for that information in discovery, and they did not produce it.
What do they say when you ask them, presumably they're under oath, whether Millennium has any assets? What do they say?
The deposition of the Millennium officers, it was not under oath. There was no testimony taken under oath because the depositions were delayed pending the production of the documents. They were not forthcoming. We sought summary judgment on a number of grounds, including that they had violated Judge Shader's order that they produce these financial documents.
Well,
and
sanctions,
Judge Shader,
of course, obviously. That sounds like contempt.
Well, there's it's also appropriate for the district court to draw an inference and, in fact, to impose
to
a sanction in the form
inference.
Of to draw an inference that there was a commingling of assets because they failed to produce the financial statements and failed to produce the bank accounts. And we asked that inference be drawn, and Judge Shader drew that inference.
Are you really arguing that Millennium, that had nothing in 2004, then had something and then gave it to the Hams so that you wouldn't be able to get it from Millennium? Is that your argument?
Millennium must have something.
Is that your argument?
Yeah.
Yes or no?
My argument is I don't know.
Is that your argument? I asked you a yes or no question. So answer it.
I don't know what they have, Your Honor, because they haven't produced
financials. I asked you a yes or no question. Is that your theory of what happened? Millennium acquired assets after 2004 and then gave them to the Hams to evade your attorney's fee judgment.
Is that yes, that is my theory.
That's your theory?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Malone. Anything further, Mr. Rosenson?
43 seconds. Very quickly. Millennium produced financial statements for 2005 and 2006. The Hams produced their personal financial tax return for 2007. The 2008 return wasn't filed by the time that the briefing had occurred, so there is no 2008 tax return from the Hams.
Are the Hams wealthy?
The Hams wealthy? This is not in the record, but I can answer. If they are wealthy, then they should be doing certain things more appropriate with some of their professional advisors. But I can only say that I have no independent knowledge and have no base to conclude that they are living by anything other than Hams.
I thought you said they'd produce their financial records.
Oh, yes. Their tax return for 2007 is attached as Exhibit M, as in mother, to docket number 96. It reflects adjusted gross income of $776 and taxes due of $142. That was for 2007. They are.
Yes, they may have assets that don't.
Right. That's right. That was just a tax return.
Real estate holdings.
Right. And I have from time to time received payments that are in excess of $700. So I know that that's not their only money that they're living on.
Right.
I will state that there was no wrongful act.
What is the status of the collection proceedings against the corporation?
There was a judgment that was registered in Nevada, but the no citation has been set. No deposition of an officer has occurred. No, we gave them the bank account information. No bank accounts have been garnished. As far as we're aware, I believe that they would have to give us notice even if it goes directly to the bank. So as far as we're aware, besides the registration, nothing.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Where Mr. Malone ended up is by saying, my real claim in this case is to recover a fraudulent conveyance. Because if Millennium distributed any assets to the Hams, that would be a fraudulent conveyance, given that Millennium is underwater. But your position is that there has been no discovery in the supplemental proceedings to collect the judgment.
Plus, the record reflects.
Just trying to make sure
that is
correct, indeed your position.
With one correct. The one slight twist is that the record reflects that the Hams are lending money to Millennium in 05, 06, 07, 08. So the money is not going from the corporation to the Hams. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you.